This is Positive Parenting. Parenting expertise and advice from best-selling parenting author and national newspaper columnist, Mr. Dad, Armin Brott.
Hello and welcome to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott. Here's a seemingly easy question for you. How do children become who they become? We've talked about this a lot on the show, and there's no question that genetics plays a very important role. Intelligence, physical attributes, and temperament, they all have been found to have a very strong hereditary component. And there's also, of course, a lot of evidence that shows that environment contributes significantly. So there's really no longer a dispute between nature versus nurture, but it's really more of a collaboration between the two, working together. Our first guest in today's show has a little bit of a different take on that, though. He says that children become the messages they get the most. That means that given the power that you have in shaping your children through messages, the core question we should be asking ourselves is, how can I be sure I am sending the healthiest messages to my children? And the answer to that question really has two parts, and we're going to discuss them both in today's show. First of all, you need to be clear about what messages you want to communicate to your children. And second, you have to develop your own skills in conveying those messages. And we better get started on this right now, because before you know it, kids are going to be getting messages from sources that are a lot less controllable and a lot less positive. And that's peers and popular culture. We're going to learn all about messages and a lot more on today's Positive Parenting Show. We'll be right back after this.
Now, get ready for more Positive Parenting with Armin Brott from the MrDad.com radio network.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott, and my guest for this part of today's show is Jim Taylor, who is the author of Your Children Are Listening, 9 Messages They Need to Hear from You. Jim, thanks for joining us.
Armin, glad to be with you again.
Well, glad to have you. Let's talk about the whole idea of messages. You know, there's a lot of stuff, and we've been talking about this a lot on the show, about nature versus nurture, or that there is really no such thing as nature versus nurture anymore, that there's really both of them working together, and in fact that one kind of brings out the other depending on what's happening. But you talk about something that kind of comes in a little bit from left field, which is that children become the messages they get the most. Explain that, please.
Yeah, that's really the underlying theme of my book, and one thing I've seen in my practice with families and also in raising my own children is that kids these days are bombarded by all kinds of messages, some healthy, some unhealthy, a lot from popular culture for sure, from peers, teachers, all kinds of sources. And it's really important that parents make sure that their messages are heard, because I'm a strong believer that despite what some people say, that parents, certainly for a good number of years in kids' lives, are the most powerful influences in their lives, and that those early years really can shape who that child becomes. And the way parents convey the way they want to shape their children is through the messages that they send through a variety of what I call conduits.
And I think one interesting thing is that parents are the most influential source in their children's lives for probably longer than they think.
I appreciate you saying that, Armin, because a lot of people say by the time kids even just enter elementary school and head out into the larger world, parents' influence starts diminishing. But my experience and actually some of the research suggests is that well into teenage years, parents can be a huge influence. It has declined some, of course, because of peers, because of their exposure to the outside world. But parents for a long time have a tremendous influence, and that means that parents need to really step up and make sure that they're using that influence in a positive way, because so many messages that kids are getting these days are not healthy ones.
Well, let's talk about you have a chapter about this, the why and the what of messages. So are there general categories of messages or certain things? And we'll talk about some of the specifics, of course, as we go through the show. But just sort of for background, what are the categories that we're looking for?
Well, first of all, the why of messages, I think I just provided in that parents do have that influence.
Right.
So the what
right.
is a wide variety of areas in terms of who they want their child to become, the kind of person they want them to become. I think fundamentally it starts with their values. And unfortunately, values have gotten kind of a bad rap, Armin, these days because of the stuff you hear in politics. But when I talk about values, I'm talking about the things that made our country great, values that we can all agree on, honesty, integrity, hard work, compassion, all these things. And I'm a huge believer in instilling the values in kids through value messages. So that's one thing. Another thing is self-esteem messages. That is to say, helping children develop a clear sense of who they are and how they feel about themselves. And unfortunately, popular culture and a lot of parenting books have sent the message that the way you build children's self-esteem is to tell them how wonderful they are.
Right, right.
So, kids are constantly being rewarded and encouraged and reinforced for things that they do, and they're being told how wonderful they are. The problem is that very often those messages are inconsistent with reality. And the best way for kids to get self-esteem messages, for example, is through experience,
mm-hmm.
through feeling loved, not by being told they're loved, but by feeling love from their parents, feeling safe and secure, and also by feeling competent. And that last issue of competence is really neglected these days. And the way kids develop competence is through success,
doing stuff,
failure in the activity.
Right. No, they've got to have a chance to fail. Yeah, that's been a big theme around here lately is how we're kind of coddling kids a little bit too much and not giving them the opportunity to fail. But I have a question for you to go back a little bit to the messages. You're saying that we're not generally passing these messages on, and we're kind of, in fact, sort of relegating the responsibility to culture and other people. But aren't parents always sending some sort of messages? I mean, even people who don't seem to be too terribly interested, you know, they'll say please and thank you or things like that. I mean, just sort of basic politeness and basic kind of getting through, no, you can't talk to people like that, or don't hit your sister, or you know, whatever it is. There are messages that we're giving without really having to think about it too terribly much.
Absolutely, but I think in a way that's the problem, because there are different ways we convey messages, different conduits we as parents use. One is when we talk to them directly, like you say, please say please and thank you, say goodbye, these sorts of things. But and also in what we do to them in terms of expectations and consequences. But I think one area that we often neglect is we as parents influence our kids in terms of sending messages most powerfully, I think, by simply being who we are, and our kids watching us. And these messages can be positive or negative. But I think what's most important, yes, we're constantly sending messages, but the problem is that there's not a lot of deliberate thought about what messages we're sending. And unfortunately, you know, I can't speak for you, Armin, or other parents, but you know, I grew up in a family that sent a lot of good messages, but also some not so great ones. And my concern always is I don't want to pass those on to my kids. And we tend to recapitulate the messages we got from our family. So I think a real awareness of parents thinking, what messages am I sending my children by being who I am? So, for example, a fearful parent will pass on that fear to their kids very often.
Fearful of what?
Fearful of whatever.
Okay.
You know, these days parents are so worried that their kids are going to get injured or they're going to lose or what have you. So there are parents who I constantly see who are just afraid for their children because fundamentally they're afraid themselves. And so
the kids end up with that message, yeah.
And they're going to see, oh, it's important to not be willing to take risks because it's, quote, dangerous. That creates a reluctance or a fear on the part of the child. If their parents yell a lot, well, that's the message that yelling is an appropriate way to communicate with another person.
All right, well,
so I'm a strong believer in parents being very conscious, very deliberate in what those messages are, and for one very powerful reason. Back in the day, Armin, when we were young, most of the world was on our side. Even popular culture sent mostly good messages. Schools, sports, as well as other families in the neighborhood sent more or less positive messages. Unfortunately, we've lost control of popular culture. In fact, popular culture is not popular anymore. It's more like manufactured culture, where it tells us what we should believe and what we should do with our kids. And unfortunately, popular culture sends these messages for one reason and one reason alone, that is to make money, not because it's in the best interest of kids. And with new technology these days, kids are bombarded by these messages 24/7. And that's why it's so hard being a parent these days, because parents need to work extra hard against that behemoth known as popular culture.
Well, you know, Jim,
why, Go ahead.
Yeah, and it just seems interesting because you're making a case in a pretty strong way, perhaps without thinking about it, that parents really need to be up on popular culture. I mean, there's certainly I think that we can't fight it to a great extent. I mean, that's just so big and so huge, and there's so much power behind it. But if you're going to help your kids kind of steer it in the right direction, you need to know what's going on. You need to know who Lady Gaga is and Jay-Z and everybody else, and you need to know why kids are getting so many tattoos so that you can actually talk about these things instead of just throwing up your hands and saying, kids these days, I don't know what they're doing.
Very well put, Armin. And not only popular culture, but technology, because technology is the primary conduit through which kids are getting these messages from popular culture. I mean, it used to be just TV and some radio, but now, obviously, all the computer and online communication is the issue. And so, yes, parents need to be very well informed. And at the same time, there are a lot of two working parents, and life is stressful and busy, and a lot of times they just don't have time to think about it. And yet it's so important because, as you suggest, we can't stop popular culture. What we can do as parents is make sure that our messages are heard, ideally before, but at least during the time that they're getting messages from other sources that are less than healthy and positive.
Right. We're talking with Jim Taylor, who's the author of Your Children Are Listening, 9 Messages They Need to Hear from You. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk to Jim about some of the specifics about the 9 messages. Stay right where you are. We'll be right back.
More with Mr. Dad, Armin Brott, after this, from the MrDad.com radio network.
You've just seen your doctor, and he's ordered blood work, x-rays, and other tests. But what does it all mean? Well, you should ask. The single most important thing you can do for your health is to ask questions. Be an informed and active member of your healthcare team. Remember, your health begins with you. To learn the types of questions to ask, get the brochure, Be Prepared for Medical Appointments, at ahrq.gov/consumer. A message from the U.S. Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality.
This heavyweight bout is about to begin. The challenger wears white trunks with a blue stripe, and the champ is wearing, looks like an examination gown from the doctor's office. And from the back, we can... Ooh, that's not pretty. Champ, what's with the crazy getup?
I've got to take care of my family.
Yeah, so?
Well, when you love your family, you got to go in and get those important medical screenings. A lot of potentially deadly diseases can be treated if you catch them in time.
So you wear the examination gown because...
Because I'm a real man. Real men take care of their families and get those tests. Real men wear gowns.
Okay, champ. Good luck. Here we go. The champ's not wasting any time. It's over. This fight is over. Champ, you barely broke a sweat. Any words for your fans out there?
Remember, go to ahrq.gov for a list of the tests they need to get and when to get them.
What was that web address again?
ahrq.gov. And remember, real men wear gowns.
Go to ahrq.gov. This message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AHRQ, and the Ad Council.
Ever notice when you have a baby, everyone seems to give you advice? From your mother-in-law, to your own parents, to your friends. But when it comes to the important stuff, like immunizations and protecting my baby's health, I trust my baby's doctor. She really listens to my questions about shots, gives me great information, and she works with me to make sure my baby gets protected. And that's something even my mother-in-law can agree with.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Now, get ready for more positive parenting with Armin Brott from the MrDad.com radio network.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. We're continuing our discussion with Jim Taylor, who's the author of Your Children Are Listening, 9 Messages They Need to Hear from You. And just before the break, I was promising people that we would get into some of the specifics. So let's jump in. You did mention a little bit about competence and about love being the very important ones. Go a little bit deeper into those two, since they are so much at the core of the whole thing.
You said competence and what?
Love.
Love, yes. Love obviously is the foundation of everything for me and in my work and in my family life. But unfortunately, love has gotten sort of a twisted rap in a way that this is an area that's become quite controversial in that I don't believe in unconditional love. And I talk about this from the perspective of the child, not the perspective of love our children. But let's be honest, we don't always express that love to our kids. And for, through a kid's eyes, especially young ones, when we are get upset, when they do something wrong and we punish them or we show disapproval, they can't, they're not sophisticated enough to distinguish between, oh, my mom is angry at my behavior or disappointed in my behavior versus my mom doesn't love me. Love can be a really powerful tool when, unfortunately, it also becomes a weapon that, that parents use. So I think this idea of unconditional love from the child's perspective is doesn't do us any good. At the same time, the idea that conditional love is bad, I also disagree with that. Conditional love, if used judiciously and appropriately, can be a wonderful way to direct your children down the right road in terms of the messages you send.
Yeah, I want to be very careful about that one, though. So
yes.
Give me some specifics about conditional love and how you would express that in a way that's positive or can produce positive results.
Let's say your child is mean to another child. And so you express your disapproval and you say, you know, that was not appropriate. If you do that again, there will be consequences. Now, what you're basically saying is that you're temporarily withdrawing love or threatening the withdrawal of love. And that is then a tool for a child saying, oh, I think then that I want to behave in a different way. Unfortunately, without realizing it, a lot of parents use conditional love as a weapon, usually in kids' achievement activities. And, of course, Tiger Mom, who has gotten a lot of press these days, is a classic example of the wrong kind of conditional love. Making how they perform, how they achieve, the factor that dictates whether they express love to their children.
Okay. So is that a lot different than what we've been sort of trained as parents to say to our kids that I love you, but I don't love this behavior, to actually come right out and say that?
Well, unfortunately, you know, that's the classic response. But kids, young kids can't make that distinction. And I don't think you need to. I think as long as you express love in terms of hugs and kisses and affection and attention, that's all the messages they need to get in terms of feeling that sense of my parents love me, I feel valued. And then using, quote, how I define conditional love from the child's perspective as a tool to help them realize that there are consequences to their actions. And one of those is that temporarily, again, from the child's perspective, my love is going to be withdrawn. Again, it's only temporary, and it's only on the appropriate areas. That is to say, their behavior, the kind of people they are, not on
mm-hmm.
achievement.
Okay. You know, I was going to ask you about competence, but I think we've really kind of talked about that on a little bit here and certainly on other shows about the importance of letting kids fail. So I want to jump to a couple of the other ones. Talk about security as being the child's safe harbor. I mean, the knowledge that your parents will always take care of you is a big one, and I think particularly in divorce cases and things like that where that whole issue is in question or where kids are given too much freedom and they just don't really know for sure whether their parents are going to be there.
Right, and these days parents feel a lot of pressure to let their kids grow up and experience life and so on, and once kids get older, part of becoming a young adult, moving through adolescence and moving to a young adulthood is becoming independent. And yet I can tell you in my work with a lot of young people, I can say for sure that kids want boundaries. They want limits placed upon them. Because the reality is they know they're not quite ready to handle that big, crazy world out there. And so setting clear expectations, setting limits on what is appropriate and what's not, is really important for kids because that sense of security, that's the sense of, okay, I'm safe. And as long as I'm safe and I know I'm safe, I can go explore,
mm-hmm.
take risks. Taking risks, healthy ones, of course,
sure.
are an essential part of becoming healthy, happy, and successful people. Having that foundation of, I know that if I get out there too far, and whether that's too far out on a playground or too high on a jungle gym, or simply can't control myself because I've lost it emotionally.
Right.
My parents will be there to be strong and to comfort me and protect me from that world that really is too big for me at this point.
Well, how do you send that message, though? I mean, this is another one of these cases where coming out and saying, honey, you'll always be safe here is nice to say, but they need to get that message in a nonverbal kind of way, don't they?
Completely. I mean, fundamentally, talk is cheap, Armin, as you well know, and they need to see it in their actions. And I think one place that's very important is I'm a big believer in tough parenting. And unfortunately, our culture has told parents that they need to be friends with their kids. And my response to that is, not your job. Because not only do kids not want you to be friends with them, they need you to be their parents. And being their parents means forcing them to do things that they might not want to do, or limiting them from doing things that you believe they shouldn't do. And so, again, it goes back to establishing clear expectations of what they can and cannot do. And as they get older, having them collaborate and participate to get buy-in, of course, and then having consequence with bite. One thing that hurts kids is when parents, A, don't set in any kind of expectations, so they're just free to roam around the world however they want, and that is an uncomfortable situation for them. Or parents set expectations but don't enforce any consequences.
Mm-hmm.
And then kids know that they've got it made. And so tough parenting doesn't mean being mean or angry or controlling. It means knowing what's best for your kids and doing what's best for them, whether they like it or not. Unfortunately, these days, life is busy. Life is tiring. And one of the most dangerous words in parenting is expediency. Expediency. And that means doing what's best for you, what's easiest for you, rather than what's best and easiest for kids.
Right, sure.
And the best parents I've seen, and the research supports this, are the ones who are loving and caring and supportive, but also are tough on their kids. They set high expectations, and they have consequences when they don't live up to those expectations.
All right, Jim, let's go on to a couple more that are, we talked about them kind of offhand, but the idea about gratitude, about saying thank you, please, and thank you, and the idea of compassion, which I'll talk about them kind of together. Another example of just saying be nice to people or say please and thank you isn't quite enough. How do you get those messages across about compassion?
Well, let's look at some of the messages that they're getting from popular culture these days. Research has shown that kids are substantially more narcissistic than they were 2 decades ago, substantially less empathetic than they used to be. The messages from popular culture is it's all about me and I don't care about other people. And so parents need to not just say you need to be nice to people, but they need to live it. Because an interesting thing is, as I'm sure you know, one of the surprising findings in the research on happiness is that gratitude, expressing gratitude, is one of the most powerful influences on happiness. And so obviously being a powerful role model, expressing gratitude to other people. One thing that we do every night at dinner is at our dinner table we hold hands, and we take a deep breath, close our eyes, and say, let's be thankful. And we ask our children and for us to think about people or things we're thankful for. So a lot of it's just training, if you will, practicing, mm-hmm. making them aware of that. When you bring in compassion is a way of life. And so exposing your kids to activities that help them learn about passion. And that means community service. That means helping others less fortunate. That means helping family members. And so the more they experience it, the acts of compassion and gratitude, the more they'll get the positive feelings that come with it. Because those are very powerful emotions, Armin, as you well know.
Yep.
And that's very likely the way they're going to become.
Jim Taylor is the author of Your Children Are Listening, 9 Messages They Need to Hear from You. Jim, great to have you back on the show. Thanks for joining us.
Great pleasure. Anytime, Armin.